All right, Shabbos, good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is Kuf Beis. We are starting on Kuf Aleph Amud Beis, the Gemara. It says the Gemara, but it's an interesting case. Itmar, ha'omer l'chaveiro chayiv ani l'chamana. So if a person says to his friend, I'm chayiv to you, amana. Now what's the case over here? The case over here is a person is saying, I have a pre-existing debt. I have a pre-existing debt. So what happens? Rabbi Yochanan says, okay, if you admit a pre-existing debt, then l'maisiyah chayv, Reish Lakish Amar Potter. Reish Lakish says, no, the admission of a pre-existing debt does not make you chayv. So says the Gemara, hechi dami, what's the case? Ida amar lehu atem adayai, if he says, Rabosai, in front...
Earthquake.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Should I turn the camera around? Maybe I want to catch this. So solidified into the ground. So listen to this. So hey Chitami, what's the case? So we'll say, if the person who's admitting the debt is saying in front of the individual, you are my witnesses, then we'll say, I mean, if he's being molded in front of witnesses, so again, let's say I come in front of witnesses, and I say in front of witnesses, Reuven, I owe you $1,000. So if I'm admitting a debt in front of witnesses, then why would I be putter? Then why would I not be liable to pay that debt? And furthermore, but if I'm not admitting it in the presence of witnesses, and I'm not going ahead and telling witnesses that lamaisa again, I went ahead and I owe you money, then my time with Rabbi Yochanan to come a chayiv. Then ultimately, what's the logic of Rabbi Yochanan who says that you're chayiv? To which the Gemara says, the olam delo ka'amrlu atamadayai. So in reality, the case over here is where he's not saying, you are my witnesses. Right? He's not claiming that ultimately, again, he's not admitting this there in front of witnesses. What's the case? The amale chayiv ani l'chamana b'shtar. Now, Bosse, this is very interesting. Where I say to Reuven, I am chayiv to $1,000, and I admit that it was done with the shtar. Now, Bosse, now what's the case? Look at Rashi. The olam dolo amrlu atamadai v'chamai askin b'shtara. Shemasa lo shtar b'fanein. So we'll say the case over here is where I go ahead and I give a shtar in front of the witnesses. V'kasuv bo ani chayiv l'chamana. And they will say, what does the shtar say? The shtar says, I owe you $1,000. Okay. V'ava pishek sab yadohu hoil v'lo chasam pater. And they will say, now technically speaking, all the shtar says is I owe you $1,000. And what? There are no signatures on it. Right? My signature is not on it. The Adam's witnesses are not on it. So this is about saying this is an unsigned shtar. So the case of the Gemara is suggesting is L'maisa, I come in front of Reuven and I say again, I owe you $1,000, and here is my shtar. I am the debtor, but I am presenting the shtar that I am chayiv to the creditor, but it's an unsigned shtar. I'm sorry? No. The Gemara is saying over here, the Gemara is saying that this is a case of delo ka'amrlu atamadai. He's not saying there are witnesses. I'm not being moded in front. There are no witnesses on the shtar, and I'm also not being moded in front of witnesses. So if that's the case again, how could I be chayiv? Because I'm saying, here's the unsigned shtar, and I'm admitting that I'm chayiv. Now, we'll say, now understand, when we say you'll say to yourself, admission of chayiv, if I say I'm going to pay $1,000, what does it matter if I'm chayiv or not? So we'll say, understand why this matters, because in the event of default, the real question that the Gemara is driving at is, would the creditor be able to collect from the chasim mishubadim, from encumbered or sold properties after the sale of the debt? You see, if I say that I'm chayiv a debt, but there's no real proof that I actually have a debt, so that doesn't preclude me from paying money. I can pay money however I want. The shaila is, if I can pay, can Reuven the creditor go back and collect nechasim mishubadim from the supposed time that the loan was made? So the Gemara says, Rebbe, so v'halka askina, what's the case here? Four lines from the bottom. To amalei chayiv ani l'chamana b'shtar. I'm saying to Reuven, I owe you money, and here is the unsigned shtar that documents my obligation to pay you. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chayiv. So Rabbi Yochanan says, now this is a valid debt. Alima milsa d'shtara kiman do amrlu atem edim. Rabbi Yochanan will say that the presence of an unsigned shtar is no different than what? Than admitting the debt in front of witnesses. And admitting the debt in front of witnesses makes it a bona fide debt. Rabbi Shlakish Amar Potter. Rabbi Shlakish says, no, that I'm Potter. Lo alima milsa d'shtara. He says, no, an unsigned document is not of the same veracity or the same power as what? As admitting the debt in front of witnesses. So Tanan, so it says, the Gemara calls to my Mishnah. Hano, so it's a fundamental machlokas of Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Right now, the way the Gemara is understanding it is the power or effectiveness of an unsigned shtar. It's written in my handwriting, but again, it's not signed. So the Maisa, what is the effectiveness of that shtar? Rabbi Yochanan says, that is as if I admitted the debt in front of witnesses, which makes it a binding debt. Reish Lakish says, no, it's not binding. Again, I could pay all that I want, but it does not create any lien against property. So the Gemara says, Tinan, Hanosi Asa'ishu Paski Imo Lazunas Pita Chamishanim. So let's remember from our Mishnah from yesterday. A man marries a woman, and she has a daughter from a previous marriage. And I go ahead, I, the new husband, commit to go ahead and support her daughter for 5 years. So Chayav Lazona Chamishanim. So I have to support her for five years. So the Gemara says, my love, Ki Hai Gavna. Are we not dealing in the Mishnah with the same case that we just expressed? Now, Bosan, I look at Rashi, last Rashi on the Daf. Rashi says, "My love, ki I gavna, ma edus yeshala achar zman bedavrezeh, love ki I gavna." They're both saying, "No." The shaila, interestingly enough, is supposed to say, "Let's say, what proof does she have that I committed to this? Right? What proof does the wife have that I committed to support her daughter?" Shemosa l'shtar b'fnei edim. It must be that I gave her a shtar in front of witnesses because of bo ploni kibel alov. And it's written on it that I accepted upon myself for 5 years to support the daughter. Kach, in this amount. Ve'ein sham lo kinyon ve'lo chasima di'i havashtar chosom bi'adam ma'ila memra. The Rabbi says, here's what the Gemara is driving at. The fact that the Mishnah says that if I marry a woman and she has a daughter, and I agree to support her daughter, she has a daughter, and I agree to support her daughter for 5 years, what does the Mishnah say? I have to support her for 5 years. Okay, so it says the Gemara, what's the chiddush in that statement? If there's a signed document that I agree to support the daughter for 5 years, then what? Yeah. Then what? Then the Mishnah doesn't have to teach me anything. What the Gemara is suggesting is it must be that what kind of shtar is there? It's a handwritten shtar that I have, but the shtar was not signed. The shtar was not signed by witnesses or by myself. So now what the Mishnah is telling me is that even though all there is a presence of an unsigned shtar, which, by the way, I'm not contesting it, but lemais, again, it's in my handwriting, it's not signed, then, again, that's enough to make me chayiv. Therefore, I will say, that's a proof to Rabbi Yochanan. It's proof to Rabbi Yochanan that, again, if I show up and I say in front, and I say that I owe Reuven $1,000, but all I have is this unsigned shtar, that unsigned shtar is like the presence of witnesses itself, and therefore makes it a binding financial obligation for me towards Reuven. To which the Gemara says, top of Kuf Beis, lo, that's not the case. Bishtari Piska, and I will say, now this is really interesting. I know I always tell you stuff is interesting. This is really interesting. So he says, no, that's not the case over here of where it's an unsigned shtar. It's what's called Shtari Piska. I will say, now what's Shtari, or should I say, Shtari Psikasa? What's Shtari Psikasa? Kidrav Gidl, Damrav Gidl, Amarav, Kama Ata Nosin Labincha, Kach Vikach. The Kama Ata Nosin Labitcha, Kach Vikach. So we'll say, so what would happen again? So what would parents do? We'll say, this is Tanoim, that Rav Gidl said the name of Rav, that the father of the chassan, father of the kala, would sit down, and they want, and the parent of the chassan, the father of the chassan would say, how much I'm giving to my son so-and-so. And the father of the kala would say, I'm giving to my daughter so-and-so. Amdu v'kidshu kanu. They would get up, they would shake, they would go ahead, and that point in time, we'll say, in times of the Gemara, they would do kiddushin. After the Tinoim, Kiddush will be done immediately after the Tinoim, and Kanu, and all of the financial obligations are binding. Hein hadvarim haniknim ba'amira. And these are agreements that are done or that are acquired, that become binding through speech. Now, we will see what through speech really means is without a formal kinyan. Now, look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, lo bishtari psikasa, or psiksa. Hachasan va'kala poskim tonaim shebeinehem. So we'll say the chasan and the kala, they make financial agreements between each other. Bishnei edin va'edin chosmin edus gemura. Ve'im tomer imkein ma'ile memra. Itztarech kegon deleka kinyin ela dvorim. Va'ashmo inon kidrav gidol delo ba'inon kinyin. So we'll say, listen to this. What Rav Gidl is pointing out over here is that lemaisa, they go ahead and they make this agreement, but they make this agreement without any kinyanim. Now, I both say, you have to understand something. In general, in order for an agreement to become binding, there has to be, like, this is true even, Menachem Sir, you could answer this on a legal level, or Tetzir also. Right? In order for agreement to be binding, so there has to be consideration. Correct? Has to be consideration. So we'll say, so listen to this. If let's say Chassan and Kal, let's say Father Chassan and Father sit down at the table, and they both say, okay, I'm going to give, you know, 5 head of cattle, I'm going to go ahead and give a flock of sheep. So what makes that promise binding? So in Halacha, sometimes consideration is done in the form of a kinyan. That if I'm Mekabel kinyan, that's the consideration that I'm giving towards this. The Chiddush of Rav Gidl is that even without a kinyan, all of these things become binding. That's the chiddush over here. Even in the absence of a kinyan, the parties ultimately commit themselves, even without a kinyan. What the Gemara is suggesting is this would be the same thing. So therefore, if a man is marrying a woman, and she happens to have a daughter from a previous marriage, and the wife says, I want you to agree to support my daughter for 5 years, so where would that obligation be included? It would be included in the Tanaim, right? Including all of the premarital financial agreements. So this obligation to support the daughter would be there as well. And hein dvarim hanikrin ba'amira. The great chiddush is that these things can be acquired even without a kinyan. I will say, now we know today we don't do that. Today we do kinyanim. Right? Again, we do a kinyan by the Tanaim. And again, there by the Tanaim, because it's the fathers who are committing. It's the fathers who are Mekabel kinyan, and by the Ksuva. This is what we'll say again. This is why, again, technically speaking, it appears that by the Ksuva, the Chassan verbally commits himself. Maybe that should be enough also. We don't pass in that way. We make the Chassan do a kinyan. It's that kinyan that ultimately makes the obligations in the Ksuva binding. Tashma.
What are the Edim signing on?
I'm sorry?
What are the Edim signing on?
So the Edim are signing on a promise to deliver. But that promise to deliver is not really halachically binding without a Maisa Kinyan. That's
the
I'm sorry? It is a shtar, but what does shtar do? Shtar can't make you chayiv to give something. That's not how shtaros work. That's what I should say. That's not how obligations work. If you, under normal circumstances, if let's say you want to go ahead and you're going to give me a gift of $1,000, so, and you want to make that gift binding, that you have to give it, to write a shtar matana is not enough. You actually have to do a kinyan. So if we did a chalipin, that would make you obligated to give me that matana. So even though, again, you have a document written down over here, Lamai says, it's not really obligatory until there's a maskeber of Gidl says, nevertheless, we allow these obligations to be binding. Tashma. Let's listen to this. Kasav l'koin shani chayiv l'cho chamish sloim. Let's listen to this. I wrote to a coin, I'm chayiv to give you 5 sloim. Now, I will say, now, this sounds very interesting, because remember, 5 sloim is also what? Is the value for pidyon aben. Right? So what happens? So I'm going and I write the document to the coin. I'm chayiv to give you 5 sloim. So what's the halacha? Chayiv liten lo 5 sloim. So I'll say, I'm obligated to give him 5 sloim. Ubino ina padui. And but yet, my son is still not redeemed. So even though I wrote this document that I have to give him 5 sloim, my son is still not redeemed. So Gemara says, shiny hasam. They're both saying, now, what the reason why the Gemara is bringing this up is because Lamaisa, you see from here that just a document to go ahead and pay by itself without any type of substantiation or edim signing, it is not binding. And that's why Allah Lamaisa, my son is not redeemed. To which the Gemara says, shiny hasam de meshubad le midar aisa. But we'll say it's different because in this case over here, my money, that 5 sloim, is meshubat to the coin midar aisa, since I have an obligation to be poed to my firstborn son, and the amount for pinyon is 5 sloim, he already has a shibut against that. So the Gemara says, 1 second, ihachi amai kasa. So we'll say, so what's going on over here? So if a coin really already has an entitlement to my 5 sloim to redeem my son, so why am I writing a document? To which the Gemara says, kide levarer lo coin. So I'll tell you what the document does. The document says is my coin selection document. I'm identifying that I'm going to use Arna coin to go ahead and redeem my son. So I'll say, so again, I don't see what's happening over here. See, if you're telling me that the document is to select the coin, and I'm writing in the document that I owe the coin 5 sloim, so why doesn't this work for the pidyon? To which the Gemara says, why isn't my son nifta? Why isn't he redeemed? Kidula. The Amr Ula Dvar Torah Padu the Cheshiyitin. But listen, here's what's interesting. Technically speaking, if I go ahead and I appoint Aaron HaKohen, I say, Aaron HaKohen, I want you to be poed to my son. And I give him a document that says, I owe you 5 sloim. Technically speaking, and he does the pidyon. So the pidyon is effective when I deliver him the money. So the moment that I deliver him the money, the pidyon is effective. However, again, umay taima amru b'no ere padas. But Rabbi said, why in this case do we say that, no, if you use the document, if you use the shtar to tell the coin that you're chayiv from five slim, that it doesn't work? So we'll say, because here's what you can't do. What you can't do is the following. Let's say, again, it happens to be, I have a firstborn son who I need to redeem. So I go over to Aaron HaKohen and say, listen, Aaron, I don't have any money on me, but I'll tell you what I'm willing to do. All right, do I have a deal for you? Here's what I'm going to do. Shimon owes me money. He owes me five shloim. So I'm giving you the loan document that Shimon owes me. Because remember, we'll say, he who holds the document possesses the power to collect. So I'm giving you the shtar. You could collect from Shimon. Shimon will even come to pay you and we'll call it even. So we'll say, that you cannot do. That is not a proper financial medium for Pigyon HaBen. The concern, so I will say, so now remember, so let's play this out. Technically speaking, if I go ahead and I go through the whole process of the Pigyon with the coin, and I give the coin an IOU. So technically speaking, when I pay him the money, the Pigyon is effective. What Chazal were concerned about is, if we allow the use of shtar in one case, what may happen? You may come to use it in other cases. And paying the coin by essentially conveying to him entitlement to collect another debt is not an effective form of pigeon. Therefore, essentially, to avoid that case, what do? We say any cases dealing with shtaros will not result in the pigeon of the child. Amarav, so Rav says, Rabosai. Rav says, Ketanoi. So what's the issue of it? This is Machlokes Tanam. Rabosai, now we're going back before to the Machlokes, Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. The Machlokes, Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish is really Machlokes Tanam. Listen to this. Amarav Ketanoi. Arif Hayotze Achar Chitum Shtar. So Rabosai, another interesting case. So Gemara wants to suggest now to Machlokes, Rish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan that we had on Amud Beis is in fact the Machlokes Tanam. How do we see this? So listen to this case. Let's say you have a shtar, a loan document. Reuven borrowed $1,000 from Shimon. And after the signatures of the witnesses, what happens? You have on there that Levi writes that he guarantees the debt. Now this is written as like a postscript after the signatures of the Eidim. So what's the halacha? So go b'menichasim b'nechorim. So we'll say the most that Levi the guarantor could be on the hook for is what? Is now we'll say, so let's say Reuven defaults. Shimon comes to Levi to collect. Remember again, Reuven's borrowing from Shimon. So now and the bottom of the shtar after the signatures, Levi writes that he's willing to guarantee the debt. So what happens? Reuven defaults. Shimon comes to Levi. So the Gemara is suggesting over here that because the guarantee came after the signature of the document, therefore what? The most that Levi, the guarantor, could be on the hook for is unencumbered property. So if he has accessible property now, then Einachinami, you'd have to cover the debt for Reuven. But if all he has is sold property, then the Mais again, the creditor can't go after that. Rabbi Yishmol Amru Shmol says, well, say if you look at Rashi, he says, "Govim minachasim enichorin, hamal v'mina ari v'lo minachasim mishubadim, kevin de la'achar chisum ashtarhu havye kemil v'alpeh." And Rabbi Yishmol, now the logic behind that is, because Lemaisa, since the guarantor signed after the close of the shtar, after the signatures of the witnesses, so meaning because he's coming after the fact, therefore again his liability to guarantee the debt is capped. So an episode like this happened to Kifar Rabbi Shmuel. The Omer, Rabbi Shmuel said, like we just said before, that the guarantor can only be chayiv if he possesses unencumbered property. Amar lo ben Nanis. So ben Nanis said, what are you talking about? Ben Nanis says, no, he's not out the guarantor in this kind of situation where he signs after the signatures of the witnesses. Vosai is what? He's not on the hook for anything. Amar lo lama. So he said to him, why is that? Listen to this. What's the banana says? Amar lo, sharechonik es chaveiro b'shuk. Umatza chaveiro v'amar lo, hanach lo v'ani etein l'cha. So listen to this case. Like, I'm walking in the marketplace and I see that Shimon is mamish choking the life out of Reuven because Reuven owes him money and Reuven's not paying. I'm supposed to say, it's not a metaphor. He's literally choking the life out of Reuven to get his money. And I say, Shimon, stop. I'll go ahead. I'll pay you the money. So Shimon releases Reuven. So I'm supposed to say, what's the halacha under those circumstances? Potter. I don't have to pay him. Why do I not have to pay him? Shelo al amanasu hilvo. Because I'm supposed to say, remember again, because the truth is that transaction has nothing to do with me. Meaning that when Shimon originally lent Reuven the money, Shimon didn't lend Reuven the money with the understanding or with the faith that I was somehow guaranteeing this loan. So because I really have no involvement in this, the fact that I stepped in to save Reuven's life by telling Shimon that I'm going to pay back the debt creates no obligation on me. So the Gemara says, so now Bananas would say, so too in this case over here. They both say, if a guarantor signs after the signatures of the witnesses on the shtar, you know what we say to the guarantor? Very nice, very nice, but you're a little late to the party, right? Meaning the document is done, the transaction is sealed, which in essence means you have absolutely no liability. So we'll say, fundamental machlokes in Rabbi Shmuel and Bananas. When guarantors sign after the signature of the witnesses, Rabbi Shmuel says it is a valid or a bona fide guarantee. But because he came after the close of the transaction, the guarantor's liability is limited to only nechasim b'nei chorin, unsold, unencumbered property. Banana says, if you are signing on after the signatures of the witnesses, after the transaction is complete, it means that the lender did not lend the money to the borrower knowing that you were there, right? Because you must remember, the fact that you're signing after the close of the shtar means you came a little bit late to the party, which means the transaction really happened without you. If the transaction happened without you, then the extent of your guarantor liability is zero. So the Gemara said, Rabbi Yochanan, Damar Rabbi Shmuel, V'Rishlagish, Damar Rabbi Bananas. So why don't we say that Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbosai, holds like Rabbi Shmuel, because you must remember, Rabbi Yochanan Amud Beis was the one who said that if you come along with an unsigned shtar and you admit that you owe Reuven, you admit that you owe the creditor money, so Rabbi Shmuel said, you're chayif. So, excuse me, Rabbi Yochanan said that you're chayif. So Rabbi Yochanan should hold like Rabbi Shmuel, because Rabbi Yochanan was the one who said that the guarantor who signed on afterwards is chayif for nechasim ben chorin, and the Shlakish who says that you're potter from the unsigned shtar will hold like Bananas. To which the Gemara says, Alibu de Bananas, Kuli Amalo Pligi. So I'll say everyone agrees that according to Bananas, if you would go ahead and admit that you owe a debt and all you presented was an unsigned shtar, that you would be pater. Ki Pligi, when does the argument come up? Alibu de Rabbi Shmuel, in Rabbi Shmuel Shita, Rabbi Yochanan Rabbi Shmuel. So Rabbi Yochanan holds like Rabbi Shmuel. Ve'ish lakish ad kan lo kam Rabbi Shmuel hasam ela deshach l'shibu de doraisa. So Rish Lakish will say like this, when does Rabbi Shmuel go ahead and make his claim? That's only in a situation where what? Where there could be a potential Shibud D'Oraisa, there could be a potential biblical claim. Aval Hocha lo Shayech Shibud D'Oraisa. But Rabbosai, ultimately again in the case, if you look at Rashi, Aval Hocha, Ploni Chayiv Leka Shibud D'Oraisa. But Rabbosai, in the case of where Lemaisa, again, a person comes forward admitting that he owes a debt, there is no Shibud D'Oraisa in that case. Gufa, Amar Rav Gidol. So now the Gemara goes back and revisits the discussion we had on the top of Amud Aleph, namely about Tinoim. So the Gemara says, Gufa. Amar Rav Gidol, Amar Rav. Kama atanosin lebincha, kach v'kach. V'kama atanosin lebincha, kach v'kach. So the fathers are sitting down and they're making these arrangements. How much are you going to pay, right, for your son? Not how much are you going to pay for your son, but how much are you going to pay towards the new couple? And how much are you going to pay towards the couple? And what happened? They both agree on amounts. Amdu v'kidshu. They get up. Kiddushin occurs. Hein hein advarim haniknim ba'amira. And these are the things that are acquired with speech, i.e. without formal kinyan. Amar Rava. So Rava says, Mistabra milsa d'rav. Bebito Nara, supposed to remember again, Sarav is advancing a very novel idea, namely that Lamaisa, you can go ahead and affect these formal agreements even without what? Even without any form of kinyan. So the Gemara says, so comes along Rava, and Rava says, I think that this position of Rav, that you could affect these agreements without kinyan is when? He says, Bebito Nara. It's when only when you're marrying off a daughter who's a Nara. Now, the truth is, it's not just Nara. What he's saying is, it's either a Kitana or a Nara. Because what happens when a father is Mekadesh, his minor or Nara daughter, what happens? He gets the Kesef Kiddushin. That's what it literally means. He goes ahead and he gets benefit. Rashi says, Kesef Kiddusha La'aviyah. What Rav is saying is like this. When do we say that an agreement becomes binding without a kinyan? So I would say, when is that? It was like we said before, when there is consideration. What's the consideration that's being offered over here? The father gets the kesef kiddushin of his daughter. So because he gets the kesef kiddushin of his daughter, therefore what? He's willing to commit himself to all of these other financial obligations. But I will say, if he's marrying off an adult daughter, if you marry off your adult daughter, you arrange the shidduch, who gets the kesef kiddushin? The adult daughter herself. So I would say in a case like that, where there is no real consideration being given to the father of the daughter, then the maisa again, he would not commit himself to these financial obligations without a binding kinyan. So the Gemara says, v'halokim. V'halokim means like, oh my God, you know, what are you saying? Amarav, afilu bogeres. Right, OMG, right? Right with the exclamation point. Right? So right, what's going on over here? Amarav, afilu bogeres. It can't be true. Rav must be saying that this case works where the parents, where the father of the bride commits himself to the financial obligations of the couple, even when she's a bogeres, and I'll tell you why. Because it will say, remember, from the groom's side, the father of the groom never receives any level of consideration. Right? Because remember again, Kesef Kiddushin goes from, the running of the Kiddushin goes from husband to wife. So again, if you think that this whole thing is dependent on receiving some level of financial consideration, and because the parties are receiving money, that's why they're willing to commit themselves ultimately to this agreement, that can't be true because the father of the chasen is never receiving any kind of money, and yet what did we say? He goes ahead and commits himself to it. What hana is the father of the chasen getting? Ella bahi hana dekamichasni ahadadi gamri umakni lahadadi. But rather, they both do get hana. They both say, what's the hana that both parties are getting? Their children, Baruch Hashem, are getting married. That's the hana. So because they each have the hana of knowing that the children are getting married, lemaisa, that's the hana. That's the consideration that each of them receive. And that is the consideration that allows this agreement to be binding, even in what? Even in the absence of a formal kinyan. Umikni lahadadi. And therefore, again, they agree to commit to one another. Amarli Ravina Ravashi, dvarim halalu nitnu likasev, although nitnu likasev. Now the Gemara asks a very interesting question. So now we've established that technically speaking, these things, these agreements, these tanoim could become binding even if they are not committed to writing. So the shayla is, can they be committed to writing or not? Look at Rashi. Nitnu likasev, nosnu chachamim ksiva ladavar, imbo lahachtim edim bedvar malalu shehein below kinyon, olo nitnu likasev, So also listen to this. So the shaila is like this. So let's say the parties, right? The father of the chasen, the kala, say, listen, you know, it's not that we don't trust you. But, right, we'd like to be able to commit this all to writing. So the shaila is, are you allowed to commit this to writing in a way that has formal witnesses signed on it and Kabbalah Sakinyan? I will say now, remember, understand that when in the previous iteration of this, when Rav is saying that hein hein dvarma nikrim ba'amira, that these are things that ultimately are acquired with speech. Each one is committing to one another. Let's play this out for just a moment. So let's say the father of the bride goes ahead and agrees to give 5 cattle, and then he defaults. So the chasen takes out the tumah and says, "Listen, you owe me money." So the father says, "Okay, I owe you money. I don't have any money. But as soon as I have, I'll pay you." So the chasen says, "Well, 1 second. At the time we got married, you did have money and you sold off properties. I want to collect my money from the chasen mishubalim from sold properties." The boss says, "Does the chasen have the right to do that?" So the answer is no. If you don't have a document, if you don't have a shtar, if you don't have a formal shtar with eidim, then you can't collect from the chasen mishubalim, only from the chasen benichorin. So the shayla now, let's say, is like this. Let's say the parties want to formalize their agreement by putting it down in writing with witnesses' signatures and all the bells and whistles so as to allow the parties to collect from the chasen mishubadim in the event of default. So is this permitted or not? So the Gemara says, Amarle, lo nitnu likasev. So he said, no, the halacha is that Rabbah said this was not given to be written down. That the way Chazal instituted this is that Tanaim ultimately, again, was supposed to be a verbal agreement between the parties. And again, Rabbah said, you could do it in front of witnesses, and you could even have a shtar written, but lamaisa, again, there was no maisa kinyon. So because there was no maisa kinyon, the parties have the ability to collect from one another, but what? But not from the chasen mishubadin. Esve, hapikchin hayu kosvin al menasha azonas betcha, 5 shanim Calls my shatni. So I would jump back to the Mishnah for just a moment. So Gemara is asking a kasha now. Remember, this is going back to the case where the husband agrees to support the daughter of his wife for 5 years. So the smart ones would say what? The smart ones would say, I agree to support your daughter for 5 years. Calls man sha'at imi. As long as what? As long as we're married. As long as we're married. But if we're no longer married, I'm not supporting your daughter. So Gemara says, my kosvin. So we'll say, so what do you see over here now? Here, interestingly enough, it says what? It says that lemaisa, you write this down. You write this down, my kosvin, to which the Gemara says, omrim. It doesn't literally mean that you're writing this down, rather what? It means that lemaisa, you're saying it. Vekari leilik amira ksiva. But 1 second, Rabbi said, do we ever call a verbal statement writing down? I mean, do we ever call a conversation between parties ksiva in? Yes, we do. Vahatnan, we learned, hakov sev leishto din advarm eli b'nechsayich. Well, so remember, we learned this before. A man writes to his woman, I want nothing to do with your property. The Tani Rabbi Chiya ha'omer le'ishto. And yet Rabbi Chiya said that, what does it mean, Rabosa? It means not one who writes it, but rather what? One who states it. Tashma, ein kosvin shtare erisin v'nisuin elamin dashnehem. So we'll say, we learn that you can't write shtare erisin v'nisuin unless, of course, you have the consent of both parties. I will say, now, I want to be clear. This is not talking about that you can't marry a woman without her consent. That's obvious. What it means is that you can't go ahead and write the shtar unless both parties have given the green light to writing the shtar. So the Gemara says, Hamidash Neim Kosin. But what do you see from here? You see from here that Lamaisa, again, if both parties consent, you can write it. My love, so we'll say, so what shtari irisin? My love shtari psikasa. Is this not talking about this tenoim? And you see again that what? That you actually can commit it to writing, which is what a contradiction to what we said before, to which the Gemara says, no, lo, shtari irisin mamish. No. Shtari irisin in this context literally means, well, so it doesn't mean tenoim. What does it mean? It means actual shtar to affect irisin. Because most remember, we learned first mission in Kiddushin, that what? That you could affect Kiddushin in three different ways. Kesef, Shtar, and Bia. So Lamais, again, you can go ahead and affect. So this is talking about a real Shtar Irisin. To which Mar said, of Sharbia de Itmar, Kasvu Lishma, Vishlami Daita. Rabbah say, if you wrote a Shtar Irisin for the sake of this woman, but not with her consent. Rabbah and Ravina say the Kiddushin works, meaning it's a valid vehicle for Kiddushin. But Rabbi Sharbia say no. If the document was not written, it has to be written lishma for her and also with her consent. You know, Rabbi say could be that after the fact she'll say, okay, I'll use it. It's not good enough. The document itself has to be written with her knowledge and with her consent. Tashma. So I'll say the Gemara quotes another idea. So the Gemara says mesu. Now this is talking about again. This is going back to the Mishnah. Now let's say again the husbands died. So we'll say, remember in this case, binosehen nizones min nechasim menechorin. So we'll say, if lemaisa, so what happens? Their daughters, so let's say a man has a daughter. So lemaisa, again, his daughters are supported from nechasim menechorin, unencumbered property. But he, we'll say, now remember, this is the same case. Man agrees to marry a woman, and she has a daughter from a previous marriage, and he agrees to support her for 5 years. Then what happens? He dies. So what happens in that case? His daughters, his actual biological daughters, are supported from the unencumbered property of the estate. But yet the daughter of his wife, whom he is still obligated to support for 5 years, he needs one as minichasim mishubadin. The Rabbah says she could even seize encumbered properties, sold properties, to go ahead and satisfy her mizonos obligation. Why? Mipnei she kabalas chov. Because again, she's a creditor. She's not a daughter. She's a creditor. How come I ask? You know what's the case? Bishakano miyadan. Now, what's interesting about this is that you just got finished telling me that what? That Lamai said the case of where he commits to support her for 5 years is a case of a verbal agreement. So if it's a verbal agreement, why is she permitted to collect from the chasim mishubadim? To which the Gemara says, "Come on, ask, you know, what's the case?" Bishakano miyado. No, the case over here where she collects from creditors is where Abosai, where there was a maisa kinyan, where the father or the husband did a kinyan with the daughter, and that entitles her to go ahead and collect even from the chasim mishubadim. Iachi benos nami. If that's the case, that there was a kinyan, his daughter should also be able to collect from encumbered properties. Bishakano lezu velo kano lezu. What's the case of Abosai where he did a kinyan with his stepdaughter, but didn't what? Do a kinyan with his actual daughters. Umay Pascha. Ihi davi b'shas kinyan, mahani le kinyan, benos de lo havlu b'shas kinyan, lo mahani lu kinyan. So I'll say, what's the case? Okay, Salef from the Maisa again, he must have done a kinyan with the stepdaughter at the time that he got married. So the stepdaughter who was around at the time of the marriage, so the Maisa kinyan with the stepdaughter is binding, but the Maisa kinyan, but the other daughters ultimately, again, were not present at the Maisa kinyan. Obviously, they weren't present at the time that the father married the mother, and therefore the Maisa, they don't have the right to cut from the Chasim Mishubadim. Milo askina dahad b'shas kinyan, but I don't understand. You can structure a case where the daughters were alive, his natural daughters were alive at the Shas kinyan as well. How can you do that? Ve'echidami kigon digarsha v'ahadra. But so that same man was married to a woman, they had a daughter, he divorced her, and now he remarries her. But Rabbi Osai, again, in this case, Ela Ihi Delesa Bitnai. So Rabbi Osai, so the Gemara is pointing out over here, if you want to structure a case where the daughter is alive at the time of the Maisa Kinyan, you could do so. So therefore, that's not going to be a good answer. So what's the case of where the stepdaughter will be a creditor and will be entitled to collect from the Chasim Mishubadim, but the natural daughter will not? I'll tell you the Gemara. So I'll tell you where. The Gemara says, Ela Ihi Delesa Bitnai Bezdin, Mahani Le Kinyan. Benos de isnu b'tnai beizdin, lo mahani l'kinyan. To which the Gemara says, I'll tell you the difference. A stepdaughter, Rabosai, a man has absolutely no halachic obligation to support a stepdaughter. Therefore, again, the tnai to support her works. But, or do I say the promise to support her works. Natural daughters, right? Real daughters. Lemaisa, again, the father does have an obligation to support her. And therefore, again, the additional kinyan will not go ahead and be binding by them. To which the Gemara says, doesn't make sense. Migra gari, so I don't understand, because a father has an obligation to support his daughters, that pre-existing obligation puts her at a disadvantage for collection of her mazonos after the father dies. What you're telling me is like this. Because the father has an obligation to go ahead and support his daughters, therefore any additional Kabbalah's kinyan is really irrelevant. Therefore, if father dies, natural daughter could collect from the Chasim Benichor, but not from the Chasim Mishubadim. But stepdaughter, whom the father does not have an obligation to go out and support, if what? If Lamaisi does a kinyan with her, she would be entitled to collect from the Chasim Mishubadim. So effectively, what you're telling me is that a Maisi kinyan with a stepdaughter puts a stepdaughter at a better advantage than a natural daughter. Ela benosav hainu taima kevan disnu b'tinoi beizdin, amrit sori at v'sinu. Rather, Rabbi Osai, the Gemara says like this, I'll tell you why normal, regular daughters can't collect from the Chasim Mishubadim, because there is often an assumption that what? Because the father is obligated to go ahead and support his daughters, there is a general assumption that before a father dies, he always gives his natural daughters some property. So because he gives them literally, tsari at vasinu means he gives them a bag of money. That a father is going to make sure before he dies that his daughters are taken care of. So, and he won't necessarily do that with his stepdaughters. So because of that, daughters are only able to go ahead and collect from the chasim and nechorin, unencumbered property. Whereas if there was a maisa kinyan done with the stepdaughter, she would actually be able to collect from the chasim Mishubadim. Lo yomer harisham. So Moshe, remember again, the Mishnah says that the husband can't go ahead and say that if the, this is going back to the case where a man agrees to go ahead and support his wife's daughter for 5 years. So what happens again? What happens if, let's say, they get divorced and she's living somewhere else? So the father, the husband can't say, if the daughter wants the mazonos, let her come to me. Rather, again, for the duration of the obligation, he has to bring the mazonos to her. Rav Chista says, this teaches us that a daughter's place is by her mother. The idea being, Rabbi Osai, that Lamaisa, if you look at Rashi, Zosomer's Abbas Eitzelaim, the eternal Lamakom Shima Velo Katana Labas Labes Achia, Lamandu Shekenu Adin, Shetigadl Abbas Eitzelima, Ubas Hanizonis Menabonim Zonin Osobesima, then you comfort us on the Dry Slum. So listen to this. What it's saying is, in this case, let's say either through divorce or the father dies. So let's say the husband dies, but the obligation to support the wife's daughter is still there. Now, you could say, the Yarshim could say, look, let the stepdaughter come and live with us. Because the truth is, it costs us additional money if what? If we have to deliver, so we're happy to provide them mazonos, but we don't have to incur additional costs. Let her come to us. So they don't have a right to claim that. The girl, the daughter, has the right to say, I want to stay by my mother, because the Gemara says, Chazal felt that the proper place of a daughter was by her mother. And therefore, the Maisa, even if it's going to create an additional cost for them to have to deliver the mazonos to the daughter of the widow or daughter of the wife, the Maisa still have to do that. So the Gemara says, "Mi ma'ite b'gidul askinon, Dilma b'tana askinon. Rabbah say, how do we know we're dealing with an adult woman? Maybe we're dealing with a ketana, and we always say that a katan always has to be by the parent for the following reason. Because of the following episode. Disanya, Misha meisveniach ben katan li'imo. Rabbah say, if a father died and he left behind a minor son, Yarsha av omer mihei gadol etzlenu, v'ima omeres ye b'nei gadol etzli. So we'll say, what happens? So the Yarshim, right? Let's say the father has two sets of sons, or it could even be one set of sons, but let's say he has two sets of sons, and the Yarshim say, listen, we're willing to support our minor half-brother, but let him come to live with us. And the mother says, no, I don't want him to live with the half-brothers by the estate, I want him to live with me. What's the halacha? So we'll say we allow him to grow up, bless you, by his mother, and we don't allow him to grow up, we don't make him go and live by the brothers who would technically inherit him. Why? My saw, because it was once an episode like this. Rabbah say, where what? Rabbah say, now this is where a father died, left behind sons. Let's say sons from a first wife, but he also has another son from a previous wife. And what happened? The sons from the first wife said to the mother of the son from the second wife, come, let him live with us. We'll support him here. And what happened? Ushechatu erev harishon. They killed the minor son the first night he was living with the other brothers. We'll say, now why did they kill him? They killed him because they wanted his portion of the estate, because they did not want him to inherit the portion. Because also remember, now that he was killed, in other words, what the Gemara is saying is families do all kinds of crazy things because of inheritance. So therefore, the Gemara says, so therefore, again, Lemaisa, and Abba said, now this is all by a minor child. So by a minor child, it's clear a minor child is always able to live with the parent and does not have to go and live with the inheritors of the estate, even though it's more financially prudent for the inheritors of the estate to have all of the inheritors and all those being supported by the estate living under one roof. Imkein listening lamakom shehi, ma lamakom she'ima. So we'll say, if that's the case, the Mishnah should have just said that the Yarshim have the obligation to deliver her support to wherever the place where the girl may be. Why does it say wherever her mother is? Shamas mina bas eitzel ha'em loshna gedola veloshna kitana. We'll say, what our Mishnah is coming to teach us is what? That a child always has the right to claim to live with the parent, and it doesn't matter whether the child is an adult or the child is a minor. Child always has the ability to claim, I want to live with my parent, and does not have to go and live with the estate, even though what? Now remember, the inheritors of the estate are claiming, come live with us, we're happy to support you, but we're not willing to incur the expense of what? Delivering your mizonos to some other location. Kamash Malan, the child who is entitled, whether it's in this case the stepdaughter who is entitled to a certain number of years of support, or if it's a child from another parent, from another mother than the Yarshim, child always has the right to say, I want to live by my mother, even though that results in additional expenses to the estate. All right, the Bosse will stop over here. Bosse, stay tuned today to your email for when Daf Yomi is going to be tomorrow. There might be a little bit of a change in schedule. Daf may be in the afternoon, but Amir Tashem will send it out via the email.
Also via email.